11. The dream, large and gray, hanging like the tatters of a web, gathered itself around him and hugged him greedily. He screamed, but instead of sounds, there drifted out of him stars. The stars rose until they reached the panoply of web, and there they struck fast and were extinguished. He screamed again, and this time the force of his voice rolled him downhill. Crashing through dripping vines, he came to rest in a muddy trough, a furrow half-clogged with water. The water, brackish, stung his nostrils, choking him. He gasped, floundered, crept against roots. It was a moist jungle of growing things in which he lay. The steaming hulks of plants pressed and shoved for water. They drank noisily, grew and expanded, split with a showering burst of particles. Around him the jungle altered through centuries of life. Moonlight, strained through bulging leaves, drizzled gummy and yellow around him, as thick as syrup. And in the midst of the creeping plant pulp was an artificial structure. Toward it he struggled, reaching. The structure was flat, thin, with a brittle hardness. It was opaque. It was made of boards. Joy submerged him as he touched its side. He screamed, and this time the sound carried his body upward. He floated, drifted, clutched at the wood surface. His nails scrabbled, and splinters pierced his flesh. With a metal wheel, he sawed through the wood and stripped it away, husk-like, dropping it and stamping on it. The wood broke loudly, echoing in the dream silence. Behind the wood was stone. Gazing at the stone, he felt awe. It had endured. It had not been carried away or destroyed. The stone loomed as he remembered it. No change had occurred, and that was very good. He felt the emotion all through him. He reached out and, bracing himself, plucked from the stone a round part of itself. Weighed down, he staggered off and plunged headfirst into the oozing warmth of plant pulp. For a time he lay gasping, his face pressed against slime. Once an insect walked across his cheek. Far off, something stirred mournfully. At last, with great effort, he roused himself and began searching. The round stone lay half buried in silt at the edge of the water. He found the metal wheel and cut away the groping roots. Then, bracing his knees, he lifted the stone and dragged it away, across a grassy hill so vast that it faded into infinity. At the end of the hill, he dropped the stone, crashing into a little park to get about. Nobody saw him. It was almost dawn. The sky, streaked with yellow, would soon be drained, would soon become a hazy gray through which the sun could beat. Getting into the front seat, he started up the steam pressure and drove carefully up the lane. The lane stretched out ahead of him, faintly damp, faintly luminous. On both sides, housing units were jutting lumps of coal, oddly hardened organic substances. No light showed within them, and nothing stirred. When he reached his own housing unit, he parked the car, making no sound, and began lugging the stone up the rear ramp. It took a long time, and he was trembling and perspiring when he reached his own floor, and still nobody saw him. He unlocked his door and dragged the stone inside. Unhinged with relief, he sank down on the edge of the bed. It was over. He had done it. In her bed, his wife stirred fretfully, sighed, turned over on her face. Janet did not wake up. Nobody woke up. The city, the society, slept. Presently, he removed his clothes and climbed into bed. He fell asleep almost at once, his mind and body free of all tension, every trouble. Dreamless, like an amoeba, he too slept.